The headlines this hour: Israeli warplanes carry out fresh indiscriminate strikes on Gaza's southern town of Rafah, killing dozens of civilians there. The U.S. reaffirms Israel it will get all the money and military support needed to continue the genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. And Yemen warns the newly formed U.S.-led military coalition in the Red Sea of a painful response against any violation of its sovereignty. This is news. Thanks for joining us. Day 74 of Israel's deadly onslaught on Gaza, where fresh attacks have left nearly 50 Palestinians dead in Jabalia and the southern city of Rafah. The total death toll from the regime's onslaught since October the 7th is now around 19,500, most of them women and children. All across the Palestinian territory, hospitals and residential buildings are among the prime targets of Israeli bombings and shelling. Medical sources say that Israel has once again attacked Al-Ahli Hospital in Gaza City. They say most of the hospital staff have been abducted by invading troops. The hospital is now completely out of service. The World Health Organization says Kamal Adwan Hospital in the northern city of Beit Lahia is out of function as well. Israeli forces have laid siege to the hospital complex. The situation remains dire at other hospitals, including Al-Shifa, the largest one located in Gaza City.
The current situation at Al-Shifa Hospital, we're in the emergency department, which is completely packed with patients, as you can see. There are only 5 ambulances working in northern Gaza right now, and patients are self-presenting on donkey carts, on stretchers, being walked down the road. It's incredibly crowded. There are very few staff. Hundreds of patients awaiting surgery. It's just an unbelievable situation. This is a hospital in need of resuscitation. They indicated that there are only 5 or 6 doctors, 5 or 6 nurses, and about 70 volunteers from the community here who are taking care of hundreds of people. They're not able to do surgery. They're not able to provide intensive care. They're delivering babies in the emergency room. They don't have fuel. They don't have staff. They don't have supply. WHO will stand with Shifa and with the whole health system here in Gaza. But what we saw today was among the worst we've ever seen of a hospital, with patients on the floor, patients being carted in on trolleys, blood everywhere, the few medical staff suturing children on the floor, people wailing out in pain, not enough staff to support them. It's really an unbelievable situation. Something really needs to be done. We've taken some action today. There is an enormous amount still to do. We have to support Shifa, and we have to support the health system here in Gaza.
We have now switched over to the skyline of Gaza. It's pretty dark, and one of the reasons is because of that smoke, rather large plumes of smoke that's billowing up in the sky. Obviously, this is a result of a strike by the U.S.-Israeli regime forces, of which it seems like today they have struck, like other days, practically several locations based on the reports that we have received. This obviously raises the possibility of civilian deaths. At this point, Israeli missiles and airstrikes, especially in the Rafah area, as we have been bringing to you the news of that in the southern part of the Gaza Strip, have struck 3 homes, and as a result, 20 Palestinians have been murdered, based on the statements coming from the Gaza health officials. The Gaza Health Ministry has announced 19,453 deaths that has occurred because of the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. Now, hopefully we can get in touch with our correspondent in order to elaborate more about what has happened. We now do have Muti Abu Masaba, who is a correspondent. He has in Deir al-Balah, and if we can get that communication established, we can get an idea, and maybe he can tell us what this smoke is all about. Joining us from Deir al-Balah, of course, tell us if you have information on that or any other developments there in the Gaza Strip.
Yes, Pierre. The Israeli airstrikes are still maintained and continued over several areas of Gaza Strip. Over the last couple of hours, the Israeli fighter jet intensified their airstrikes and attacks against Jabalia City and the Jabalia refugee camp, leaving at least 16 Palestinian civilians killed. And in addition to that, there are more than 70 Palestinian injuries over these continuous airstrikes. These moments, the Israeli occupation forces intensify there is at least in Jabalia after multiple massacres were unfolded At least 16 Palestinian civilians were reportedly
killed. That's 60 or 16? I just want to make sure we have
16,
that clear.
16.
Very well.
16.
Very well. Go ahead.
Yes. In addition to that, 70 Palestinian civilians were reportedly injured over this continuous horrific massacres and airstrikes targeting the Palestinian civilians. In addition to that, As-Salama, the safety community, was targeted by the Israeli airstrikes in Jabalia al-Balad, particularly leaving more Palestinian casualties of the Palestinian civilians and children. So we are talking about continuous Israeli airstrikes intensified against Jabalia city these moments. In addition to that, we are in the front of continuous shelling of the Israeli artillery targeting the middle area of Gaza Strip and Khan Yunis city particularly. And it's worth mentioning that Gaza's health spokesperson, Ashraf Al-Qita, reported that Israeli occupation forces have transformed Al-Awda Hospital into military garrison, and they have kidnapped 240 Palestinian civilians, including 80 individuals of the medical staff. In addition to that, 40 Palestinian patients and 120 Palestinian evacuees who were taking shelter in the Al-Awda Hospital in the northern part of Gaza Strip, and they were denied the food and the water, and they were prevented from having any movement inside the hospital and between the departments. So it's the same scenario that took place in Al-Shifa and in Kamal Adwan Hospital. It's now repeated in Al-Awda Hospital. And among those medical staff who were targeted and kidnapped by the Israeli occupation forces in the same hospital, Al-Awda Hospital, Ahmed Mhanna, he's the director general of the hospital. In addition to that, six Palestinian doctors were also kidnapped by the Israeli occupation forces.
What is the story with Rafah, where we have three residential buildings based on one report? You may have mentioned this, but I didn't catch it. And it says that 29 have been killed, and many are feared to be trapped under the rubble. Do you have information on that?
Yes, Rafah was under heavy bombardment of the Israeli airstrikes this night, or the last night, as multiple residential buildings were leveled to the ground. Particularly those which belong to Zorob and Abd al-Al families. They are big families in Rafah city. We are talking about roughly 330 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, were reported killed over those relentless airstrikes targeting their houses in Rafah city.
And finally, we are obviously well aware of how Israel is using food as a weapon of war. Tell us the situation there when it comes to food, which shows that obviously not enough trucks and aid is coming through the Rafah border crossing, and people are either have no food or they're eating expired food, as we have reported in our news here.
Yes, it's obvious that the Palestinian civilians here entirely, we are talking about over 2 million Palestinians, they are literally trapped between the continuous Israeli airstrikes and starvation, as they don't have a real access to the basic humanitarian needs, particularly the food and the water. And when it comes to the food, the people here every day struggle and strive to find anything to eat. What we are having these moments in the between the hands of the people are is just the remainings of the canned food, and which is brought here by the aid allowed to enter Gaza Strip. In addition to that, the people are trying to find some grasses to eat here or to cook. The problem here is totally complicated, because even if there was any kind of anything to eat, there is no gas to cook the food, and there is no electricity. And the people here are trying just to ignite any small fire just to cook the food they have and to just to prepare the food for their children. So it's getting worse and worse, and even any trucks allowed to enter Gaza Strip at this moment, actually, it's not enough for the Palestinian people to convert or take it into consideration that their need that the people here have.
Thank you very much for that. That's our correspondent Muti Abu Musabid there, talking to us from Darabala. Thank you so much. Moving on, a nonprofit organization that's based in Europe has painted a very grim picture of the scale of starvation in the Gaza Strip. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor says that over 70% of Gazans are suffering from severe hunger, while many have no choice but to eat expired food items. But that's not all the suffering people are facing in the besieged Strip. Let's take a listen to a displaced Palestinian who has talked about the dire situation in Gaza.
We just have light blankets, and I swear we're sleeping on the floor. At night, it rains, and we're close to the sea. The winter is so cold, and the hardest thing is when you have to go to the toilet. There are no services, no water, no sanitation, and the smell of sewage is everywhere. And there is a garbage dump behind the camp. Life is sad, sadder than you can imagine. What can I say? There is no warmth, no warmth at all. When you leave the fire and enter the tent, which is covered with drops of dew, and there's no blankets or mattresses, the situation is hard and catastrophic.
Well, the U.S. Secretary of Defense has said that Washington will continue what he called ironclad support for the Israeli regime in its ongoing onslaught on the Gaza Strip.
This is Israel's operation, and I'm not here to dictate timelines or terms. Our support to Israel's right to defend itself is ironclad, as you've heard me say a number of times, and that's not going to change.
Lloyd Austin made the remarks in a joint press conference with Israeli Minister of Military Affairs, Yoav Gallant. Austin also vowed to keep providing the Israeli military with military support, or army, with military equipment. Washington has already provided the regime with billions of dollars in military aid. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad Resistance Movement reacted to Austin's comments and said the U.S. is encouraging Israel to continue its crimes in Gaza. The movement said that the U.S. Defense Secretary's justification that Israel is waging a self-defense war confirms Washington is actually managing the regime's military. Israeli forces have carried out fresh raids across the occupied West Bank, arresting dozens of Palestinians. Israel claims that the arrests are related to a shooting attack on Monday. Our Ramallah correspondent Mona Kandil gave us the details.
Yesterday, the Israeli military claimed that a Palestinian was driving his vehicle, opened fire at an Israeli settler's vehicle near the illegal settlement of Ataret, northern Ramallah. And since the evening hours, Israeli forces have closed all entrances leading to the cities of Ramallah and Al-Biri. Then it isolated all the villages, towns, refugee camps outside those cities. Israeli troops raided the towns of Birzeit, Jifna, Abu Qash, and conducted raids to Palestinians' homes. They stormed several shops, and also they confiscated recording from the surveillance cameras at the, at these shops and homes. Early on Tuesday, Israeli troops raided again the town of Birzeit and Al-Masayef neighborhood, northern Ramallah. And again, the Israeli forces stormed Palestinian shops and businesses, supermarkets, and also they locked in Palestinian worshippers inside one of the mosques in this Al-Masayef neighborhood, northern Ramallah. At least one Palestinian was wounded. The Israeli forces have detained at least one Palestinian from the neighborhood of Al-Masayef. In Birzeit, again, during the this raid to Birzeit again on Tuesday, one Palestinian has also been arrested by the Israeli forces along with his vehicle. In Qalandia refugee camp, South Ramallah, Israeli forces have clashed with Palestinians there, and the Israeli forces arrested one more Palestinian from Qalandia. It seems that the Israelis claim that those Palestinians are in a way or another related to the shooting attack that was carried out yesterday near the illegal settlement of Atiret. At the end of the day, 30 Palestinians had been detained by the Israeli forces from across the occupied territories, from across the occupied West Bank, only on Tuesday.
Global energy producer British Petroleum says that it has suspended all oil tanker transit to the Red Sea over what it calls deteriorating security situation in the area. Taiwan's container transportation company, Evergreen Line, has also halted shipments to and from the occupied lands in response to the recent attacks in the Red Sea. This after the Yemeni military attacked Israel-bound ships in the Red Sea. In the latest of such attacks, Yemeni armed forces performed a special military operation against two ships related to the Israeli regime. Yemen's army spokesman says the operation targeted Swan Atlantic oil tanker and the MSC Clara container ship following the crew's refusal to follow the Yemeni army's orders. Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement warns that a newly formed U.S.-led coalition in the Red Sea will get a painful response if it violates the sovereignty of the Arab country. Mohammad Abulqaiti, a senior Ansarullah official, issued the warning. That after the U.S. Secretary of Defense announced that his country and a host of other states are creating a new force to protect ships transiting the Red Sea. Abulqaiti said, however, that Yemen's armed forces only target Israeli-linked ships in response to the regime's deadly aggression against Gaza. He reiterated Yemen's stance, saying the country will not allow vessels heading to Israeli ports unless they carry medicines and food for the people in Gaza. Abulqaiti added that the U.S. is trying to frighten other countries in order to protect Israel's interests in the Red Sea. Members of human rights organizations in France have staged a die-in demonstration in solidarity with the healthcare workers in Gaza.
Today, the situation is monstrous with a humanitarian crisis, which is very, very hard for civilians, with caregivers, humanitarian actors who today are dying under the bombs. At Doctors of the World, we have a team in the south of Gaza, the vast majority of whom are struggling to do their job. They sleep outside under plastic tarps, they look for food, they look for water, like most Gazans.
Demonstrators included staff of several international humanitarian groups, including Doctors of the World, Doctors Without Borders, and Oxfam. They gathered near the Eiffel Tower in Paris. Some of the protesters were wrapped in Palestinian flags, while others were holding banners reading ceasefire. More than 300 medical personnel have been killed since Israel launched its onslaught on Gaza. Israeli invading troops have also kidnapped dozens of medical staffers. Hospitals are among several other critical infrastructures that the regime has been targeting incessantly. Global humanitarian organizations have time and again censured the regime's genocidal behavior, calling for an end to the onslaught on Palestinians. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khamenei, in a meeting with Iran's sports champions and medalists of the 2023 Asian Games and the Asian Paragames. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniyeh on November 22, 2023. I would like to thank each of the athletes who took a stand in one way or another in support of Palestine, declared their stance before the world, not in hiding, gifted their medals to the children of Gaza and the martyrs who were killed in a hospital, where the Zionist regime created a catastrophe. I would also like to thank the athletes who refused to compete with the athletes of the Zionist regime. The correctness of what they did has become clear today. The truth behind this is more apparent than ever today. These are things I am grateful for. This show of gratitude is not just a verbal thank you. It is not merely for a good action. Although whenever someone does something good, they should be thanked for it. But it is because these acts, some of which I have mentioned, have introduced and revealed an outstanding, rational, confident image of the Iranian nation before hundreds of millions of sports spectators.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
These acts, these beautiful movements, are part of Iran's national power. Everyone plays sports. All nations have athletes, players, wrestlers, soccer players, and volleyball players, and they make their country proud too. But what you have done stands out in the world, and it is superior to the issue of athletics and sports honors. These are human honors. So that was my word of appreciation to you for the great, magnificent, meaningful acts that you did. Furthermore, your efforts and your success bring joy to the hearts of our nation. When you win a medal, colorful medals, our nation rejoices and feels proud. It is very important for me that you make people feel happy and proud. I thank you for that as well. So the first thing I wanted to tell you, our dear athletes, was that I am thankful to you because of all the things that I have described. Secondly, I would like to say a few words to the officials. Of course, we have a lot to say to international sports officials. There are many things that we can criticize them about. These problems should be dealt with justly one day. Today, the colonialist, exploitative, arrogant powers stand behind almost all international centers and prevent a fair review. But one day, God willing, these matters will be assessed justly.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The axis of resistance is fighting Israel and its main supporter, the US, on different fronts, as the regime continues its brutal aggression on the Gaza Strip. In the besieged territory, the Al-Qassam and Al-Quds brigades are fighting Israeli forces and inflicting heavy losses on them. Scores of Israeli tanks and military vehicles have been destroyed in more than 10 weeks of clashes. The regime's casualties among its soldiers are also increasing dramatically. A report came out earlier this month saying that a total of 2,000 Israeli soldiers have received psychological assistance since the genocide began on October 7. But the rising casualties are not the only problem for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Dozens of captives held by resistance groups have been killed in the regime's indiscriminate bombings of Gaza. On Friday, three of the captives were shot dead by Israeli soldiers. As fighting continues in Gaza, resistance groups across the West Asia region have risen against the Israeli regime. In Lebanon, Hezbollah has been attacking Israeli soldiers and bases along the country's southern border since October 8, a day after the Al-Aqsa flood operation. Places like Hunin and Beyaz Belida have been repeatedly hit by drones and missiles. The attacks have forced Israel to evacuate several towns and cities near Lebanon. Iraqi resistance groups have also staged hundreds of attacks against U.S. bases, both in Iraq and neighboring Syria, over Washington's unconditional support for Israel. They believe that the U.S. is behind Israeli crimes. According to the Pentagon, American bases in Iraq and Syria have been attacked over 100 times since October 7. At least 60 U.S. troops in Syria and Iraq have reportedly suffered injuries during the attacks. Yemenis have also expressed their support for Palestinians by targeting southern parts of the occupied territories with missiles. They've also targeted several Israel-bound ships in Bab al-Mandab and the Red Sea. The Yemeni army announced on December 9th that all Israel-bound ships would be targeted until the Gaza onslaught and siege continues.
If Gaza does not receive the food and medicine it needs, all ships in the Red Sea bound for Israeli ports, regardless of their nationality, will become a target for our armed forces.
Following the announcement, Danish shipping company Maersk said it would pause all container shipments through the Red Sea. The company said its shipments would be sent on a detour around Africa until further notice. French shipping group CMA-CGM has also halted all shipments through the Red Sea. The Yemeni army's move is reported to have caused huge economic losses for the regime. Israel waged a devastating genocidal war on Gaza on October 7th, after the territory's Palestinian resistance movements carried out a surprise retaliatory attack, dubbed Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, against the occupying entity over its intensified violence against Palestinians. Now it seems the regime is facing an all-out crisis on different fronts.
UN agencies continue to sound the alarm bell over the desperate humanitarian situation in the besieged coastal territory. The head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees has warned that the people of Gaza are running out of time and options. Philippe Lazzaroni warned that Gaza is very far from an adequate humanitarian response.
The people of Gaza are running out of time and options as they face bombardment, deprivation, and disease in an ever shrinking space.
He described the situation in Gaza as hell on earth and said people in the Palestinian territory are facing the darkest chapter of its history since 1948. He described seeing people halting in aid truck and in desperation and swallowing down the food found inside where they stood in the street. Further noted that the people of Gaza are now crammed into less than one-third of the original territory near the Egyptian border, and the dire situation might spark an exodus. The city of Rafah on the Egyptian border, the only crossing where aid is entering Gaza, has seen its population explode from 280,000 to more than a million.
Rafah is the epicenter of the displacement of the Gazans. There is over 1 million people who have fled in this governorate, most of them, as we know, have been moved more than once since the beginning of the war. Rafah has
quadrupled its number of people overnight, and especially when the offensive in the south has started.
UN officials have warned that any such exodus would be extremely destabilizing for Egypt, for the Sinai region, and it would make a problematic Palestinian problem more difficult. It is now widely believed that the Israeli regime is deliberately targeting residential areas and the critical infrastructure in Gaza in order to make the territory unlivable for its residents. Israel has already pushed the U.S. and its other Western allies to persuade Egypt to accept Palestinian people in the Sinai Peninsula.
It seems very difficult to us that if there was a population movement outside Gaza, I think that can only mean Egypt. It would be extremely destabilizing for Egypt, for the Sinai region, and that would make a solution to the Palestinian problem even more difficult.
The healthcare system is collapsing. Expect public order to completely break down soon. And an even worse situation could unfold, including epidemic diseases and increased pressure for mass displacement into Egypt. I said that we are facing a severe risk of collapse of the humanitarian system.
UNRWA and many other aid organizations have already issued serious warnings about the dire conditions in Gaza. The UN Humanitarian Office also said that Gaza faces a public health disaster due to the collapse of its health system and the spread of disease. Doctors in Gaza are warning about the spread of diseases, especially among children, due to overcrowding and unhygienic conditions of makeshift camps, as well as the lack of medicine and clean water there. The lack of food, clean water, and shelter have worn down hundreds of thousands of traumatized people. And with the health system on its knees, its inevitable epidemics will rip through the territory.
We all know that the healthcare system is or has collapsed. We've got a textbook formula for epidemics and a public health disaster. This is in part, of course, because the shelters have long ago exceeded their full capacity, with people lining up for hours just to get to a toilet.
According to the data compiled by the World Health Organization, from November 29th to December 10, cases of diarrhea in children under the age of 5 jumped 66% and climbed 55% for the rest of the population in the same period. The UN agency said the numbers were inevitably incomplete due to the meltdown of all systems and services in Gaza because of the war. Doctors of the pediatric ward at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza have told reporters that the ward was overrun with children suffering extreme dehydration, causing kidney failure in some cases, while severe diarrhea was four times higher than normal.
The conditions of the war have led to the spreading of a lot of epidemics and sicknesses, the first epidemic of which has been one of acute gastroenteritis, which we have most frequent cases of in the children's ward. There are a number of patients come with cases of extreme dehydration, some of which can get to the point of kidney failure or weakening kidney function. Things are very bad.
I have four children with gastrointestinal diseases and flu. My youngest son has a cold, but we don't have any medicine. I have never felt as helpless and miserable in my life as I do now.
Since the truce between Israel and Hamas collapsed on December 1, hundreds of thousands of people have moved to makeshift shelters, abandoned buildings, schools, and tents. Many others are sleeping in the open with little access to toilets or water to bathe.
Children sleep in the tent, while some adults have no choice but to sleep on the streets. There's no food, no water. The children lack milk and diapers. The situation is dire, with no sanitary conditions or toilets.
Gaza's 2.3 million people now find themselves in a daily struggle to find enough clean water to survive. Residents are forced to take seawater for daily use, despite health risks. The United Nations General Assembly has overwhelmingly passed a resolution calling for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in the Israeli regime's months-long genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. The 193-member Assembly adopted the resolution with 153 votes in favor. 10 countries voted the resolution down, including the U.S., in line with this unfaltering political support for the Israeli regime. The U.S., however, does not hold the veto power at the Assembly, unlike the U.N. Security Council, where it has blocked successive such resolutions. The resolution demands an immediate humanitarian ceasefire, as well as the swift and unconditional release of all captives. It also urges all parties to comply with international law. The vote is non-binding, but is seen as an expression of the views of the international community. It also increases pressure on Israel to end its onslaught on Palestinians. Ambassadors and other diplomats burst into applause at the vote count, which showed much higher support than an October 27 Arab-sponsored resolution that called for a humanitarian truce. Iran's permanent ambassador to the UN urged the international community to decisively address the barbaric crimes of Israel.
One member state, a permanent member of Security Council, misusing its unequal authority of veto power and in clear disregard to the united will of international community, has decided to stand with Israeli criminal regime and materially enable this regime in its ongoing massacre against civilians in Gaza. The United States blatantly opposing a ceasefire which means prescribing war, violence, and eventually more death for children and women in Gaza.
Meanwhile, Australia, a traditional ally of the U.S., has sided with the UN General Assembly resolution calling for a humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza. It has been described a rare split with its close allies, the U.S. and the U.K.
Australia, alongside 152 other countries, was among the countries which voted in favour. In doing so, we joined Canada, New Zealand, Japan, France and India, and many other countries.
Now, the significance of this vote was that not only is it showing that the support that Israel had from many Western states especially for its military assault on Gaza is eroding, and even staunch supporters of Israel like Australia and like Canada are now saying we need a ceasefire.
World leaders must take a brave and bold stance against those who are fueling the flames of settler colonial violence.
And so what this shows is that Israel is isolated, the United States is isolated. The General Assembly, which is the world's parliament and which is the most democratic organ in the United Nations, has said, we overwhelmingly want an immediate ceasefire. Now, at the same time, and this is where sometimes you feel there's a parallel reality, you hear the United States voting against that, you see the United States voting against that resolution, and at the same time, words from the Biden administration about Israeli indiscriminate bombing.
Yemen is upping the ante in its retaliatory attacks against the Israeli regime, which has been pounding Gaza non-stop for over 2 months now, in what is internationally viewed as a genocidal onslaught. The spokesman for Yemen's armed forces has warned all shipping companies against dealing with Israel.
Due to the Zionist enemy's continuous committing of horrific massacres, genocide, and siege against our brothers in Gaza, the Yemeni armed forces hereby announce the prohibition of the passage of ships heading to the Zionist entity of any nationality if the Gaza Strip does not receive the food and medicine it needs.
That's an escalation of an earlier Yemeni threat to prevent the movement of Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea and the Arabian Sea. Yemen carried out that threat, attacking two Israeli ships in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait and seizing another Israeli-linked cargo ship in the Red Sea in a commando operation. That decision has forced Israeli shipping firms to change the route of their ships. Now, vowing to target non-Israeli ships moving to the occupied territories, Yemenis appear bent on really hurting the regime. The Arab country has also launched several missile and drone attacks against Israel as part of its campaign to support the Palestinians. Hossein El-Bukhaiti A senior Yemeni analyst says the Yemeni decision is consistent with international law.
If you have declared a war against a country, you have the right to stop any military ship or even a cargo ship if you think that this cargo ship is used in Israeli effort against the Palestinian people. Not only in the Red Sea, they could target it in the Gulf of Aden, they could target it in the Arabian Sea.
A look at Yemen's map shows these words hold water. The Red Sea is a strategic waterway that connects Asia, Africa, and Europe. Figures show about 10% of global trade passes through the Red Sea each year. Given that the global trade value stands at $96 trillion, the Red Sea handles $9.6 trillion worth of trade per year and an average of over $26 billion worth of trade per day. The Red Sea is also of significant importance for the Israeli regime. The port of Eilat handles the regime's trade with East Asian countries. It also handles Israeli oil imports from Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan. The Israeli regime has not officially commented on Yemen's threats and actions, but some Israeli media and analysts have expressed concern over the situation. They've warned that Yemenis could pose a serious threat to the Israeli maritime and economic interests in the Red Sea. Shortly after Yemen's announcement, Israeli media reported that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has asked the U.S. officials to do something to stop Yemen or the regime will target Yemen itself. But Yemeni officials appeared defiant, with Yemen's information minister, Saifullah al-Shami, now saying that they are ready to confront any military action against them. The officials are encouraged by million-strong marches that have been repeatedly held over Yemen over the past weeks. In those rallies, the Yemeni people, who themselves suffered for years from a similar U.S.-backed onslaught and are still under a U.S.-backed blockade similar to the siege of Gaza, called on the government to do something for Gaza amid the global silence and the Arab world's inaction. The big Yemeni announcement, which came as resistance groups in Lebanon, Iraq, and Syria have also stepped up anti-Israel and anti-US attacks, shows the region's patience over continuous Israeli massacres is wearing thin, especially after the US again blocked the UN Security Council from calling for an immediate halt to Israel's onslaught.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع. ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرض.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam was brought up under the care of the Holy Prophet Muhammad when he was just a small child. And so in this manner, the foundation of the moral and spiritual education of this magnificently intelligent child was based by the Prophet of Islam himself, the greatest educator of all mankind. Imam Ali's mental faculties were to an extent that he believed in the Holy Prophet and his mission at the tender age of 8. Therefore, Imam Ali, contrary to the other companions of the Holy Prophet, had never worshipped idols and never partook in the unreasonable demands, the oppressive actions, or the unjust acts of the Arab chieftains.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: الحدة ضرب من الجنون، لأن صاحبها يندم، فإن لم يندم فجنونه مستحكم.
أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام said, anger is a kind of madness, because the victim to it repents afterwards. If he does not repent, his madness is confirmed.
Dear friends, it's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, dear friends, we are talking about this beautiful persona, this immaculate persona, this infallible persona, this persona which is a role model for every single one of us, whether we are a Shia or a Sunni, whether we are a Muslim or a non-Muslim. If one looks at the life and the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in an unbiased manner, they will conclude and realize that the best role models for guidance are the infallible and immaculate Imams. And the first of these Imams, of course, being Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Of course, the life of Imam Ali alayhi salam is a life of taqwa, an individual who had this God consciousness, this God wariness, this piety, all of which are certain definitions of the word taqwa. In the life of Imam Ali alayhi salam, this taqwa is seen in a very bold and manifest way. Whether it is this God consciousness, this God awareness, this piety that His Eminence had in financial matters, in economic matters, in matters related to war, in matters related to the family, in societal matters, in political matters, in all the aspects of Imam Ali alayhi salam's life, we find this aspect of taqwa. We find this aspect of God awareness and God consciousness and God wariness. This taqwa, which is a fundamental pillar of Islam, this idea that we realize that we are under the vision of the Almighty Allah, that we should be aware of the presence of the Almighty Allah. And it is this taqwa which prevents us from committing sins, because we realize that we are under the supervision and under the watch of the ultimate witness and the ultimate judge, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And on the other hand, when we realize that we are under the vision, under the supervision, under the watchful quote-unquote eye of the Almighty Allah, then we also start to do good things. We start to walk down the path of righteousness because we know that Allah loves righteousness. And so we realize that we are in the presence of Allah, and so we start to move down the path of righteousness because, being aware of the presence of Allah, we try our best to satisfy Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to make Him pleased, to make Him happy and content with us as His servants and as we are in the servitude of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And so this taqwa that Imam Ali alayhi salam had, of course, he is known as the Imamul Muttaqeen, the Imam, the leader, the chief of those who have taqwa, the Muttaqeen, the pious, the God-weary. He is known as the Imam of them. And so if we want to follow in the footsteps of the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, of course, we too are going to have to inculcate this taqwa in our lives. It comes about slowly. It comes about in a steady manner. We have to be determined. We need to continue. We cannot stop in the middle of the path. We have to keep moving forwards. And inshallah, we will be able to make our master content with us as we try our best to follow the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program To My Brother. This moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
اللهم إن قلوب المخبتين إليك والها وسبل الراغبين إليك شارعا.
O Allah, verily the hearts of those who surrender to Thee are full of passionate love. The path of those who long for Thee is the straight, true road. The instructions given by those who lead on Thee are distinct and precise. The minds of those who are aware of Thy reality are filled with awe and reverence. The call of those who invite unto Thee is loud and clear, and the doors of approval are kept open for them. Whoso submits a supplication to Thee receives a favorable answer. Whoso turns repentant unto Thee gets acceptance and amnesty. Whoso bursts into tears in fear of Thy punishment obtains mercy. Whoso seeks redress from Thee finds the required assistance at his disposal. Whoso asks for Thy help procures the aid as a gift. Thy promise made with Thy servants is fulfilled. Whoso asks for pardon of his errors finds them reduced to nothing. Whoso does everything for Thy sake discovers that each and every deed has been preserved. The means of livelihood available to the created being come from Thee like a rainfall, and in addition, many recurring favors and bounties reach them in regular succession. The sin of those who ask for forgiveness are overlooked. The wants and needs of all that which has been created by Thee are properly satisfied. Those who put forward genuine demands get more than they ask for, one after the other, again and again. For the hungry, wholesome food is arranged for the thirsty, clean water is available in abundance.
أسعد حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
When we look at the concept of vilayat, which has different meanings and dimensions, it means the leadership of Ali and Ali Ali. It means the sense of love that we have towards Ali and Ali Ali. So all different meanings of vilayat come in when we use the term vilayat. And the importance of this can be explained in many, many words and, you know, articles and books. But since I'm talking to Shias, I think the best thing would be to go to the words of the Ma'sumin themselves. Beginning with the hadith from the sixth Imam, Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, where he talks about the importance of the vilayat of Ali and the Imams who came after him. And this is a hadith which is reliable, acceptable by the Shia ulama, and it's narrated by Zurara, a very famous companion of the Imam. There are actually four or five of them who are known to be the pillars of the teachings of the sixth Imam. If it hadn't been because of them, you know, the ahadith of the Imams would have been lost. And Zurara says one day, the sixth Imam talked about this concept of the five pillars of Islam. And you must have heard this term many times before. You know, especially the majority Muslims, the Sunni Muslims also talk about this concept of five pillars. And when we are talking about five pillars, we are not talking about usul ad-din. That's a different thing. An imam also talks about five pillars, but there is difference in one item in the Sunni version of the narration and the Shia version of the narration. The imam says, "Bunya al-Islam ala khamsa Shia." Islam is based on five things: al-salat, wal-zakat, wal-hajj, wal-sawm, wal-wilaya. Islam is based on five things. One is namaz. The second is the issue of zakat. Number third is hajj. Number fourth is the fasting of the month of Ramadan. And number fifth is wilaya. In the Sunni version of the narration, it says ash-shahada, you know, the kalamatain, the shahadatain. But in the Shia ahadith, everywhere you will see any imam who talks about the five pillars, he talks about namaz and roza and zakat and hajj, and then he talks about wilayat. And so Zurara basically asked him a question when he heard this. He says, فَأَيُّ ذَلِكَ عَفُوَلُ Out of these five pillars of Islam, which is the most important one? Which is the most afdal? An imam says, الْوِلَايَةُ أَفْضَلُهُنَّ لِأَنَّهَا مِفْتَاحُهُنَّ وَالْوَالِي هُوَ الدَّلِيلَ عَلَيْهِمْ Imam says that out of these five pillars of Islam, wilayat is the most important one. Because this is the key to the other pillars of faith. And the holder of the wilayat, the imam, is the one who will teach you how to do the correct namaz, how to do the correct roza, how to pay the correct zakat, and how to do the correct hajj. So all the four actually depend on the wilayat and guidance of the imam ma'soom. And therefore, wilayat is the most important of all five pillars of Islam.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Mother, don't cry for me, I'm heading off to war. God Almighty is my armor and sword, and I stand forever Palestine. Children being killed for throwing stones in the sky. They say to their parents, don't worry, God is on our side. Palestine forever.